Well, this past week, I was thinking about the pandemic and what a weird time that was when we were all just kind of trapped in our homes for 6 months, 8 months, however long it was. And if you are like my wife and I, then you went through the pandemic by watching a bunch of TV. And I'll be honest, I'll confess, I was drawn into the train wreck that was Tiger King. And I just couldn't stop watching Joe Exotic and Carol Baskin. You know what I'm talking about? Like Tiger King, man, it just hooked you and you just couldn't get away. That's when I fell in love with Ted Lasso. That was another show that came out during the pandemic where we were just kind of hooked into this American living over in England. But the other show that kind of really grabbed my attention that I wanted to just kind of spend a lot of time thinking about because there's so much history involved in this show. I've mentioned it before, but it was the documentary put out by ESPN called The Last Dance. And it's where they kind of followed the Bulls and all the championships that they won, specifically looking at Michael Jordan. And as I watched that, yeah, Michael Jordan was impressive, and yeah, it's impressive at how many championships they won. But the person who really caught my attention was Scottie Pippen. Scottie Pippen was a stud on the basketball court, just like Michael Jordan. He was an NBA All-Star, you know, played for the Olympic team, all that stuff. He could have led any NBA team in the NBA that season or those seasons, could have gone to the playoffs himself, but he decided he wanted to stay on the Chicago Bulls. And the documentary highlights how Michael Jordan and Scottie Pippen, at first, they would kind of butt heads with each other. They were both kind of vying for the top role, to be the main dog, to be the leader of the Chicago Bulls. And one of the reasons I respect Scottie Pippen is because he figured out that his role wasn't supposed to be number one. And once he figured out that he could be number two, he could be the support player to the greatest player of all time, that's when the Bulls started taking off, and that's when they started winning all of their championships. Even Michael Jordan in the documentary says, "There are no championships with Michael Jordan without Scottie Pippen. He was there for all of them." And so one of the reasons I respect and admire Scottie Pippen was because he knew his role. His role was not to be the number one player. His role was to be the support player to the number one player. Have you ever been in a situation at work where somebody kind of just goes headstrong into a new initiative, a new idea, and they think that they've got all the talent to make this thing happen? And you kind of look at them and you're like, "Bro, slow your roll. You need to know your role because what you're doing, this ain't working for anybody." It's like a craftsman, a carpenter who's really good at building things. They can make incredible projects, but then they want to try and become the project manager or the supervisor, and they soon realize it is a whole lot different to build things with your hands than it is to just manage people and manage projects. Or it's the chef who makes incredible dishes in the kitchen, and then the chef wants to open their own restaurant and take care of the wait staff and all the customers coming on, and they find out just how demanding customers can be and how hard it is to balance all of the schedules of the wait staff. Sometimes it's important for us to know our roles, to say, "I'm not good at this, I'm not made for this, this isn't what I should be doing, but this is the role that I have." In fact, I think one of the most important things, one of the most important pieces of self-awareness that we can have about ourselves is to know our role. God created each of us differently. He created each of us uniquely, and he gives each of us different talents and different skill sets, and basically says, "This is your role. This is what I'm asking you to do." And if you want to have a life that's flourishing, figure out your God-given role and then live into that role and don't try to be something that you're not supposed to be. As we continue looking at the Sermon on the Mount today, I think Jesus defines for us very clearly what our role as a disciple is. Now, we know what a disciple is. Very simply, a disciple is a follower of Jesus. It's somebody that's following the way of Jesus and seeking to be changed by Jesus. But on a day-to-day basis, what is it that a disciple actually does? And very simply, I think Jesus lays it out for us. He says, be present, add value, and point people to Jesus. No matter who you are, what your status in culture is or society is, your role as a disciple, the thing that we need to live into, is to be present, add value, and point people to Jesus. And in order for Jesus to get his point across, he uses a pretty tasty metaphor to help bring this to life for us. Matthew chapter 5, starting in verse 13. He says, "You are the salt of the earth, but if the salt has become tasteless, how can it be made salty again? It is no longer good for anything except to be thrown out and trampled underfoot by men. You are the light of the world. A city set on a hill, it cannot be hidden, nor does anyone light a lamp and put it under a basket, but on the lampstand, and it gives light to all those who are in the house. Verse 16, let your light shine before men in such a way that they may see your good works and glorify your Father who is in heaven. Now, every time we open up this sermon throughout this blueprint series, we are going to be confronted with famous words of Jesus. Words that we're familiar with, words that we've heard. Even if you're not in church, you're going to have probably heard these words at some point. And Jesus defines the role of a disciple, very simply, as being salt and light. But the problem we might have with that is understanding exactly what salt and light is. Like, salt and light are some of those things that have kind of just become a Christian cliche. Like, you know what I'm saying? Like, we print that on shirts. Oh, I walk around, I'm just salt and light everywhere I go, right? Like, I'm going to put it on my clothes, and I'm going to walk around being salt and light. Obviously not my shirt, right? Not the right color. But we walk around, we print this on it, we talk about it, we encourage each other, oh, be salt and light. But it is a Christian cliche. What in the world does this even mean? It's like that phrase where it says, you know, if God brings you to it, he's going to bring you through it. You've heard that before? Christian cliche. He brings you to it, he's going to bring you through it. Well, have you ever stopped to consider that maybe God didn't bring you to it? Maybe it was your own dang fault that brought yourself to it, and now you're having to answer for the consequences of your behavior? Or what about that phrase that goes, if God closes a door, then he'll open for you a window. Closes the door, he'll open up a window for you. What does that even mean? Does that mean I'm just walking towards the door and I see a great opportunity on the other side of the door and he closes the door, but hey, wait, he opens up the window and now I can just look at it through the window, right? I'm not climbing through the window, I might just have to look at it. What does that even mean? These Christian cliches that we use, we just kind of throw them around flippantly and we got to figure out exactly what it means. And my fear is that salt and light has become one of those cliches, and so we need to spend some time today just sitting with Jesus, sitting with these words, and trying to understand what exactly does he mean when he tells us to be salt and light. And let's just recapture the simplicity and the power of this encouragement that Jesus gives to us. And I think, very simply, he tells us to be present, add value, and point people to Jesus. For example, consider salt just for a moment. When he says you are salt of the earth, there are lots of possibilities that we could travel down to try and understand exactly what he means. For example, salt is often used as a preservative. For us in our culture, when it gets cold out, salt is used to keep us on our feet, right? Keeps us upright. If there's an icy sidewalk, we throw salt down so that we don't fall down. Salt is used to give flavor to food. It enhances the dishes that we eat. Salt is used to be a purifying agent, a cleansing agent. In the Old Testament, around the times of sacrifices and at the altar, salt was used as part of covenant language. In fact, it's painfully obvious in our lives when there is no salt. For example, you sit down at somebody's table, they've prepared a nice meal for you, you take that first bite and you're like, there's no salt. Right? That's why we keep salt shakers on the table, because it is painfully obvious when salt is absent. Or consider light. There's a lot of avenues we could travel down to understand what he means by light. Lots of possibilities. Light gives us vision. It allows us to see during the daytime when the sun rises. We couldn't pronounce this word when we were kids, but photosynthesis, man, that's a real thing that we need in our world. Think about the incredible invention of a light bulb. Now with the flip of a switch, we can see into the wee hours of the night. It's painfully obvious when we don't have light as well. So what is Jesus saying? Well, one of the things I think Jesus is communicating to us is that just like salt and light, we need to show up and be present. Salt and light is present in everything. In fact, it's painfully obvious when there is no salt and light. So when you encourage a Christian brother or sister, when you encourage someone and say, hey, go be salt and light, one of the things you are telling them to do is to be present in people's lives. Vivek Murthy is the U.S. Surgeon General of the United States, and he released in 2023 an advisory on the epidemic of loneliness that was facing our country. And he even admitted in this advisory, he had never viewed it as a public health concern until he went around and he toured the country and he heard firsthand the impact that loneliness was having on United States citizens. He wrote this. He says, people of all ages and socioeconomic backgrounds from every corner of the country would tell me things like, I have to shoulder all of life's burdens all by myself. Or things like, if I disappear tomorrow, no one would even notice. He says, I realized just from talking to people how lonely we were as a society. And then I dug into the scientific literature and it backed up my experiences. He writes, in recent years, about 1 in 2 adults in America reported experiencing loneliness. And that was before COVID-19 and the pandemic cut off so many of us from friends and loved ones and support systems, exacerbating loneliness and isolation in our country. And loneliness, he records, is way more than just a bad feeling of fear and despair and pain. It's associated with a greater risk of cardiovascular disease, dementia, stroke, depression, anxiety, and premature death. The mortality impact of being socially disconnected is similar to that caused by smoking up to 15 cigarettes a day, and even greater than that associated with obesity and physical inactivity. He then goes on to provide an 80-page report on loneliness, its effects, and how we as a country can combat it. Friends, every day you step outside of your house, and every time you see coworkers or you see people, moms, dads, going to school, you will encounter people who are lonely. They are craving and desiring and needing you to just show up and be present in their lives. You want to be salt and light? Then you be present in people's lives. I think I've maybe shared this story before, but this is a picture of Maurice Stokes. And in the 1950s, Maurice Stokes was an incredible athlete, really good at baseball in the early 1950s. And in 1956, he won the Rookie of the Year for the NBA, an incredible athlete. And then one day on March 12, 1958, while playing a basketball game, Maurice Stokes fell and banged his head. His teammates and the trainers came over and helped him up and helped him off the court. He hops on a plane to fly back home, and before he landed, Maurice Stokes took ill and was paralyzed from that moment on. He would eventually regain some of the movement in his limbs, but his life was never the same. It's one of the most tragic stories in all of United States sports history because he was a great athlete in the 50s, and he lost it all. And while it is a tragic story, it's also one of the most redeeming stories. Because there was a man by the name of Jack Twyman. He was a teammate to Maurice Stokes, and although they weren't especially close friends at the time, he said that I needed to step up and help Maurice Stokes in his time of need. And so Jack Twyman would eventually move across the country, and he would become the legal guardian and caregiver of Maurice Stokes. Maurice Stokes would eventually die of a heart attack and pass. And one time during an interviewer asked Jack Twyman, they said, why did you give up everything to serve Maurice? You gave up family, you moved across the country, you gave up your schedule and your time. Why in the world would you do that to help somebody you weren't even friends with when the accident happened? And Jack Twyman very simply said, Maurice needed someone, and I became that someone. Every single day, you meet people, you see people, you rub shoulders with people who need someone. If you want to be salt and light, then become that someone for somebody. We're salt and light when we just show up and make ourselves available, when we show up and be present. And while you're present, you can start adding value to somebody's life as well. See, one of the things with cliches is we often take these cliches and we just assume that we know the meaning. But everybody in this room might have a different definition of what this salt and light means, what this cliche means. And as I studied this salt and light this week, I realized just what a valuable metaphor this actually is. I learned that Roman soldiers were often paid in salt. They were paid finances, like money, but they were also paid in salt. In fact, it's where we get our word salary, because in the Latin, salarium is the word, sal is the root for salt. They were paid in salt. It was a rare and expensive, almost legendary item that people wanted. In fact, when you sat down at a table, it would determine and tell what your rank was in social status, social settings. If you sat above the salt, that means you had a higher rank. If you sat below the salt, it meant you had a lower rank. It's often a huge insult when we say to somebody, they're not even worth their salt. And Jesus would compliment people by saying they are the salt of the earth. Salt has incredible value, and it enhances and makes better everything that it touches. I mean, consider how salt enhances food for a second. None of us sit down at the table and say, oh, I think I'll have a nice big bowl of salt for breakfast, right? We don't just eat salt by itself, but salt is added to a dish to make it way more better. I remember my grandfather. He went to the doctor one time, comes back, and we said, all right, what's the diagnosis? Like, what do you got to do? And he was no longer allowed to have salt in his cooking or in his meals. They had to take the salt shaker off the table. And my grandfather was one of these guys. You know, he just keeps pouring salt and pepper. He just keeps pouring it. And so I remember thinking, I'm like, oh, Grandpa, I don't know if you're going to survive without salt. Like, how bland that diet must be. Or what about when you have those moments of shame and you just get a hankering for McDonald's french fries? You know what I'm saying? And you kind of stealthily drive into the McDonald's drive-thru and you're looking around, make sure you don't see anybody. And you order a big, large hot fry. And you are ready for those hot fries that are coated in salt. And you take that first bite. Maybe it's hot. Maybe it's not. But if there's no salt, man, that's a big issue. I'm going back and I'm getting me some french fries with salt on it. Or what about like when I'm cooking a ribeye? I don't marinate my ribeyes. I don't put all the special seasonings. I get that ribeye to room temperature. I put some coarse rock salt on it. And then I grill that to medium rare. And there's nothing like it because the salt enhances that meat flavor and makes it even better. It adds value to the dishes that we eat. And we know the value of light. You ever woke up in the middle of the night in a panic or after a nightmare, and the one thing you want to do is you just want to turn on the lights so that you can see to make sure that everything is okay, or you wake up in the morning and all the shades are pulled in the living room, the sun has risen, you raise those shades, and immediately there is light that comes into your living room and gives value to the things you're trying to do in your day. Imagine a world without light. Imagine how different life would be if we didn't have light. Imagine how valuable light was to the first century when they had no electricity. You see, to be salt and light means to show up and be present, but it also means to show up and add value. What if every single day that we woke up, the first thought that popped into our mind was, how can I add value to somebody's life today? John Maxwell, who writes on leadership and lectures on leadership, he includes this trait, adding value to somebody's life, as one of the 21 irrefutable laws of leadership. Writing to leaders, he says, if you want to have the best team, if you want to lead people, then you need to think about how you can add value to their lives. Before you think about your to-do list, the things you have to do or the things you want, what if you thought, how can I add value to my team? He goes on to tell the story of his 94-year-old father, Melvin Maxwell. At 94 years old, it was time for Melvin Maxwell to move into an assisted care facility, and they found a place that was close to John's home, and it was a villa that was being built brand new. Melvin was going to be one of the first people to move into this assisted care facility. And one day, John and Melvin, they're having lunch together, and Melvin tells John, at 94 years old, he says, John, I'm going to be the first person to move into this new facility, into this new villa. Isn't that great? And John says, yeah, Dad, that's really cool. But why is it so important to you that you be the first person to move into this new assisted care facility? He says, oh, John, you don't understand. You don't understand. John, old people are going to be coming to this facility. And they're going to be nervous. And they'll never have left their family like this before. And they're stepping into a new stage of life. And they don't know exactly what's going to happen. Because I'm the first one there, that means that every single day I can stand at the door. And as somebody new comes into that assisted care facility, I can say, hey, nice to meet you. My name's Melvin Maxwell. I really like this place and you're going to like it too. And we can be friends. It's as simple as that. Melvin Maxwell, 94 years old, every single day that he was in that facility, added value to somebody's life. That's why our hospitality ministry that we have out here is so important, because every single Sunday, people come to this building, come to church, they're carrying burdens and things that are weighing them down, and then they're greeted by my friend Kenny with a smile, or his mother, Mary Ellen, with a smile, and it just adds value to somebody's life. That's why our Next Gen ministry is so important, because not only when you serve back there are you adding value to a child who's learning about Jesus, you are adding value to the parents who spend all week taking care of kids, and maybe, just maybe, they would benefit and find value in having an hour to connect with God and with other people without having a kid hanging off of their leg. We can add value in the simplest ways. I came across this picture this week. This young man sitting down was on his way to a job interview, and the woman noticed that he was struggling to tie his tie. And so she jumped up, grabbed her husband, said, "Honey, help him tie his tie," to which you see him doing. And then she stood guard, protecting his face so that his dignity and respect remained intact. I don't know about you all, but that's salty, right? That's how you add value to somebody's life. This isn't that hard, right? Like, we think, oh, it's so difficult to do this. No, it's really not that hard. Wake up in the morning and say, how can I add value to my wife? She's worked all day, and now she has to come home and be mom. What can I do to bring value to her life? How do I add value to the crossing guard or the bus driver that carries my children to school safely every day? How can I add value to the coworker that I see and have coffee and lunch with and work on projects with every single day? How can I add value to my employees who set behind their burdens so that they can come here and work hard every single day? How can I add value to my husband who worries about how he's going to provide for his family? How can I add value to my children as they seek to follow Jesus? How can I add value to my community and my neighbors? How can I add value to my church? What if every single day this church woke up and said, how can I add value to somebody's life? It's even as simple as a simple prayer. About a month ago, we hosted the month of prayer, and one of those exercises that we did was the 24 hours of prayer. Now, if you didn't get to participate in that, what we do is we ask everybody to come to the building for a half-hour time slot. And when you get to the building, there are stations spread out all over the building to help you with your 30 minutes of prayer. And one of those stations that we had this year was a table in the next-gen space with pen and paper where whoever was praying could sit down and they could write a prayer that was addressed to school administrators and teachers of wherever their children go to school. So we had a decent stack of letters of prayers that were written on behalf of administrators and teachers, and Lynn enveloped those up, put a stamp on them, and we sent them out to the respective schools. And this past week, I heard from Jess Rodriguez that one of the teachers at her son's school made a point to come find Jess and let her know how grateful, encouraged, and thankful she was that we as a church would think of her and pray for her. Friends, this isn't that difficult. Just wake up every morning and ask yourself, how can I add value to somebody's life? And I also want you to understand how valuable you are in all of this. A little side note, right? Jesus says, you are the salt of the earth. He says, you are the light of the world. Who is the salt? You. Who is the light? You. You are the salt. You are the light. You are the instrument chosen to take the love and the hope and the beauty of King Jesus to the world. You are salt. You are valuable. You are light. You are valuable. And so if you're here today and you feel discouraged and you feel like a nobody, I want you to understand you have value because Jesus has called you salt and light. Think about it this way. When I was in high school, my parents were very generous in helping us kids get cars. All right, the way they were generous was they functioned as the bank. All right, so my dad bought the car, I would pay him back for the car, no interest, great deal, right? So they helped us get our cars. And I was thinking about my brother's car. My brother had a hoopty, right? It was an old car, nothing special about it, barely ran, you know, that kind of thing. My first car was a hoopty, nothing special about it. Gas gauge didn't work, ran out of gas a couple times because I didn't know when the last time I filled up, right? Nothing special about it. My brother and I, we had cars that were on the second time around on their odometers. But then I started thinking about my sister, right? Two boys, one girl. And I thought about her first car. And her first car was nice, all right? Like, it was shiny, it had a nice paint job, it was one of those cool at the time PT Cruisers. You remember those PT Cruisers? She had a PT Cruiser. They spent way more money on her car than they ever did our car. And I even learned this week, because I called to make sure my facts were right, I learned that my dad showed her way more grace when it comes to the payments than he ever did to my brother and I. And I thought, why? Because that's his baby girl. And you take great care and great importance in the thing that is carrying your most prized possession. And so he gave her the safe car. He gave her the car of value. He gave her the vehicle that was important because it was carrying his baby girl. Friends, I want you to know you are the vehicle by which God has chosen to take his message of hope and light and love to the world. You have value no matter how poor or down you may feel today. You have value if you are in Jesus because you are salt and you are light. So you are valuable and you get to add value to people as you point people to Jesus. Which is exactly where Jesus lands this metaphor. How does he begin? Matthew chapter 5, verse 13. He says, "You are the salt of the earth." And then he concludes in verse 16. He says, "Let your light shine before men in such a way that they may see your good works and glorify your Father who is in heaven." You notice salt has purpose. He says, "You are the salt of the earth. You are salt from the earth. You are salt for the earth. You are salt of the earth. You are the light of the world." Salt and light, they both have purpose. They exist for the earth. And what do we exist for the earth for? To bring glory to our Father who is in heaven. So be present, add value, and never forget to point people to Jesus. The reason he calls us to be salt and light is so that not so that we would be the star of the show, so that we would enhance and make better Jesus as the star of the show. It is not for us to be the goat. It is to be the role player, the support player, so that people might see him as number one. This is why we have to know our role. This is not about us. This is about people seeing Jesus reflected in us. This is about people seeing Jesus shine through our lives. There is purpose to the salt. There is purpose to the light, and that purpose is to reflect Jesus to the world. In the same way that you can tell when a dish doesn't have enough salt, you know that, you can also tell when a dish is overpowered by salt. And you don't even get to taste it because you spit it right out of your mouth if there's too much salt. A room with too much light is blinding. It's ineffective, and the light no longer helps. Friends, as we think about showing up and adding value and being present, don't eclipse the glory of Jesus. It's about him, not you. New Testament scholar Amy Jill Levine, who's helped form a lot of my thinking on this particular part of the sermon and also the whole thing, she writes this. She says, "Oversalted pastors in the pulpit give sermons that point to themselves rather than to the scriptures or Jesus. Oversalted disciples, well, they seek to be rewarded for good works on earth rather than works that give God glory. But those disciples who are the salt of the earth, they have gotten past the egotistic mode that says, 'Look at me.' Instead, they are poor in spirit. They're meek. They're merciful. The best salt," she says, "whether it's in food or medicine or dyes, is almost undetectable. It does its work not by calling attention to itself, but by brightening, making more alive everything that it permeates." As we step into the lives of people, as we step into our communities and our neighborhoods, don't forget why we are present and seek to add value. And just like we said last week, Jesus is why. It's not so they see our greatness and talk about how great we are. It's so that they see his greatness and talk about how great he is. It's not so they talk about us. It's so that they talk about him. Jesus is why we show up and are present in people's lives. We show up and add value to people's lives. Why? So that they might see Jesus living in us. Let's close with this thought. Brands. Everybody talks about brands. Today, everybody has a brand that they try to endorse, or they have their own brand. Branding has a long history. Back in the olden days, we would take an iron stick or whatever with a logo or a symbol on it. We'd put it in the fire. We would get it smoldering hot, and then we would take our livestock or our cattle, and we would burn that brand into the cattle. They even did it in slave times when our country had slaves. You would put a brand on a slave. Why? The brand tells who or what the person, place, or thing belongs to. It was a representation of the person. So if you find a cow with the brand on it, you know who to take that cow back to. Branding has, of course, evolved. Now it's, for a while it was signet rings or autographs. You know, I make something, I put my autograph on it so that people know that it's mine. But even today we have logos. You wear a Nike hat, you are representing Nike and saying, "I like this hat, I like this brand." We have to dress a certain way, wear certain clothes so that people might see our brand. Almost every single Sunday that I preach from this Bible. This was given to me at Christmas this year, one that I had specifically seen and heard about and was interested in. And one of the things I love about this Bible is if you just look at it, there's nothing on the front. You don't know who put this Bible together. It was published by Zondervan, New American Standard Bible, but nothing on the front. On the spine, there's no wording. There's a small little black logo that you probably can't even see from there. And if you open up these pages and look for, hey, who made this Bible? I want to buy the same Bible that he has. You wouldn't be able to find the company that put this Bible together. I kind of like that. A Bible without branding. A Bible that just wants us to see the words and the power and the beauty of simply Jesus. Right? We're all fighting for brands. We all want to be known. Tertullian was an early church father years ago. He wrote about the light of all Christians. And here's what he said. It is mainly the deeds of love so noble that lead many to put a brand on us. Friends, you and I, as followers of Jesus, as disciples, we have a brand. And a brand, what does it do? It says who we belong to or who we represent. We belong to and we represent Jesus. Jesus would say it this way in John chapter 13, verse 34, a new commandment I give to you, that you love one another, even as I have loved you, that you also love one another. By this, all men will know that you are my disciples if you have love for one another. Friends, you let the world know who you represent and who you belong to by wearing the swag of the kingdom, and it's not a logo, it's not a certain type of dress. His swag is love. It is showing up. It is being present. It is adding value, and it is always pointing back to Jesus. You don't need some fancy logo to say you follow Jesus. All you need to be is a little bit of salt and a little bit of light. And as we close today, if you need prayer after service or you want to talk about what it means to become a disciple of Jesus and you want to live into this role, this purpose of being salt and light, you want to know what it means to be baptized right after I pray, you can come talk to me. You can find Brian with the tan name tag or any other elder that has a tan name tag. And we would love to pray with you and talk with you about what it means to become salt and light, to be baptized into the kingdom of God. Let me pray for you. Heavenly Father, in a world that is constantly looking for purpose, a world that struggles with identity, Father, you give it to us right here. You tell us that no matter our status, no matter how weak we may be, no matter how poor in spirit we may be, no matter how much we're persecuted or looked down upon, you tell us exactly what our purpose is. Our purpose is to be salt and light. This is something for everyone. Thank you, Father, for giving us such a valuable job. And now encourage us and equip us and help us to be present in people's lives, to add value to their lives, and to always point them to Jesus. It's in his name that we pray. Amen. Y'all have a great week.